Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and it's time for the highly anticipated, always appreciated Duff McKagan Juke of the Week.
Hey, Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan calling. Yeah, hope you're doing well. Everybody out there is doing well. Listen, I went and saw the ballet yesterday and last night, and all the ballerinas are up on their toes. Why don't they just get taller ballerinas? Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Best Duff joke ever, said nobody. That was cute, though. Thanks to Duff McKagan. You never miss a Friday, my man, and we love you for it. And we love all of you who have been listening to Fozzy for the last 25 years. And we thank you so much. We are starting our 25th anniversary tour this October in Woodstock, Georgia, October 3rd. We're going to Florida, Alabama, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, New York, before we wrap up the first leg of this crazy run in Cleveland, Ohio, October 21st. We got a long way to go. We are taking this tour around the world as we go for the 25th anniversary. Heard some great news about Judas. Apparently it's already surpassed 800,000 units sold. We got the gold record a couple years ago. Probably in a couple more years we're going to go platinum. And Spotlight was played on rock radio over 100,000 times. And if you watch Dynamite this past Wednesday, you saw the Learning Tree and my brand new entrance music, which is Spotlight. So lots of cool stuff going on with Fozzy. Don't forget, you can buy tickets for the 25th anniversary tour at FozzyRock.com. We'll also be doing our legendary VIP meet and greets, where we meet you, take pictures, sign stuff, even play a mini set of rock and roll for you, songs you're not going to hear later in the show. Come celebrate Fozzy's 25th, FozzyRock.com, and come rock with Quarantine. We got the Quarantour, the mini Quarantour, my 80s non-makeup Kiss tribute band, doing some dates this summer in Chesterfield, Michigan, July 5th, Franklin, Ohio at JD Legends, July 6th, and Warrendale, Pennsylvania at Jurgles on July 7th. Chesterfield, of course, is at the Diesel Lounge, which is great. Ticket information and VIPs as well, quarantine.com, quarantine with a K. And our new single, Good Girl Gone Bad, just hit number 28 on the charts, our third top 30 single. Lots of rock and roll going on, but today we're going to back to wrestling, talking about Boom Pro Wrestling, an indie pro wrestling promotion based in Vancouver, Canada. Company's all about fun, over-the-top characters and storylines, backed by some great wrestling. They build their shows around seasons like a TV series and are currently in their second season, which is called The Quest for Peace. In fact, they got shows coming up tonight, Friday, April 26th, and tomorrow, Saturday, April 27th. The shows always sell out, but you can test your luck for tickets at boomprowrestling.com if you're in the Vancouver area. Boom was founded by Max Mitchell, who's coming up in a minute here to tell us more about what inspired him to start his own wrestling promotion. It's a great story that involves his baby daughter and a bracket-style tournament for her middle name. Max also shares the story about what he had to do to get a wrestling ring for his company, how he found all the great talent, including Talk is Jericho alumni Brady Malibu, one of the stars of Boom Pro Wrestling. Brady breaks down his evil lifeguard character and some of the other talent and characters like Top Guy Abraham Lincoln and his Time Machine storyline. This is fun stuff. They explain the importance of comedy and shows and angles at Boom Wrestling, how they make it work so well at Boom Pro Wrestling. So here we go. Boom Pro Wrestling with Max Mitchell and Brady Malibu right here, right now on Talk is Jericho.
Okay, so we've got the returning Brady Malibu here from the very popular Escaping Denver Airport, which we discussed at length
yes.
a couple years ago. Podcast still going?
It is. It's going great. Actually, we just finished season three, just wrapped up a week or two ago. We've already been renewed for season four and five. We have a TV project in development and also a novel that's being developed right now, which is pretty cool. So, yeah, it's going really, really well. So
it's great stuff because obviously you're a very creative and busy guy because we're not here to discuss Escaping Denver. We're here to discuss Boom Wrestling, which is your wrestling company. We got Max Mitchell here as well. You know, you sent me this email and I watched some of the clips to kind of figure out what the hell is going on. But kind of explain, let's get into it, because I'm sure the majority of people listening don't know what Boom Wrestling is.
Yeah, Max, I mean, do you want to start with, because the genesis of this comes from this amazing story, Max.
Yeah, sure. First, let me just say, like, this is such a surreal experience. Never in a million years did I expect to be on Talk is Jericho. And I'm sure that your listenership is also wondering, like, how and why is this guy on this podcast? And I just want to let them know I feel the exact same way. This is very confusing for me, too. But I'm very grateful to be here. Thank you so much for your generosity, Chris, for having me here. I guess to answer your question, Chris, like, what is Boom Wrestling? It's an independent wrestling promotion, but we try to do things a little bit differently. You know, some of your diehard wrestling listeners will probably be familiar with a promotion like DDT in Japan or now defunct, but Chikara that used to run in out of the Eastern United States area. Mm-hmm. And so the emphasis for us is on A, storytelling, and B, humor. It's also a wrestling show. And what I mean by that is this is not a comedy show. This is a wrestling show that has to differentiate itself, relies on long-term storytelling and a sense of fun and vibrance and humor to distinguish ourselves.
I get that, but it's kind of, you know, it's hard to start a wrestling company, get it off the ground. So what kind of possessed you to do that in the first place?
That is a great question. It's a strange story. So I came to wrestling late. I was never a fan really growing up. About 10 years ago, I went to a WrestleMania watch party and it kind of blew my mind what I was seeing. Mm-hmm. And I started watching and I fell in really deep. And at the same time, I was producing live comedy here in Vancouver. And so I was always talking about, well, two things. One, trying to hype up wrestling as something that people should enjoy and would enjoy to like my friends and family, peers, that kind of stuff. And then secretly in the back of my mind, I always wanted to kind of put on a wrestling show. And I was always kind of talking my wife's ear off about it. And I turned 40. I knew I wanted to do something special, not to celebrate myself, but there's sort of a social contract, you know, that's out there about certain occasions. Like when you get invited to a wedding, you're going to go and you're going to participate. And I felt like turning 40 is an opportunity to basically force all of my friends to do something.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, I'd like to do something with Prince because I'm a huge Prince fan. But ultimately, my wife was like, this is it. You have to put on a wrestling show. So she convinced me. I wasn't quite convinced at first because it's going to be friends and family. It's just going to be burning money. You only live once.
Had you put on any types of shows before?
Live comedy. So I was experienced. Yeah, okay. I was experienced at like getting the venue, getting the license, working with the performers, which is like herding cats, you know.
Right, of course.
That's what I knew. But the wrestling side of things was alien, but she convinced me. So I started reaching out to some contacts that I had. Luckily, there was a little bit of crossover between the Vancouver wrestling scene and the Vancouver comedy scene. So I had that. But I knew that my friends and family would not really care. They would come, they would watch, but how do I get them to care about who wins and who loses the matches? At the same time, my daughter had just been born, my first and only child. She didn't have a middle name yet. So I created this bracket, a 64 name elimination bracket, like a March Madness style bracket. And I should have started with 32, started with 64. Anybody wants to do this at home, start with 32. Don't start with 64. It takes way too long. But I started with 64 names. I did a whole like live stream on my Instagram revealing of the 64 contenders for her middle name.
Uh-huh.
From that point on, every day I would take a handful of my friends, throw them into a group chat, and have them sort of debate which name should go on in the bracket. And sometimes the name that went on was a shoot, and sometimes it was a work. And slowly but surely, we eliminated the names down until there was just eight. And people were on board with this name bracket. They were fighting each other in the streets, you know, debating the mouthfeel of certain names and how they were coming at all this sort of stuff. And when we got to the final eight names, that's when I blasted out this video, this invitation to everyone to come down to see this wrestling show where the final name would be determined via professional wrestling tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So we assigned a middle name to each wrestler, had them duke it out, and everybody that walked in there, they had no idea who the Rain City Stretcher Liza Hall was, but they knew that they wanted that middle name to be B-E-A. And so they were on board from the very first lockup.
But of course, you booked the matches, yeah. So you know what the names are going to be, right?
Yeah. It's so funny how many people up to this day come up and be like, I can't believe you just let these rest, like, you just threw it up and these wrestlers, yeah. They fought and you have this random middle name. I'm like, it blows my mind still to this day about that. But
so what was the final name then?
So my daughter's first name is Coco. Last name is Mitchell. Middle name is Harriet. Coco Harriet Mitchell.
So that was your first show. And then how did that lead to, because I'm looking here at what the information that Brady had sent me and the stuff that I got. And you guys have a lot of shows and they've all been sold out. So you do this first show for your 40th birthday to name your daughter, yeah. Quote unquote. And then you decide, wow, that's pretty good. Let's keep going.
Yeah. I mean, even when the show was going on, the guy that we rented the ring from, a local promoter named Cobra Kai, he came up and he's like, just so you know, I'm never going to rent you the ring again. And I said, don't worry, I'm never going to put on a show again. A couple of days later, like, you just get the adrenaline kind of wears off. And I ended the night by going through a table, by the way, as well. So I had,
of course.
Yeah. So it was just a rush. And then you just start chasing that dragon a little bit. In the back of my mind, I'm like, wow, that was pretty fun. That felt really close to being like professional.
Uh-huh.
We had a hot crowd. Everybody was into it. I think I could do this again. And so I made a list of things I just need to check off. Like, in order for this to happen, I need A, B, C, D, E, F, you know, whatever, how many list things there were. And slowly but surely, I began to check them all off. And I remember checking off the last box and just started sitting there in silence and realizing, like, I guess I have to buy a wrestling ring.
Right. How does one do that?
So I thought I would be able to jump on the internet and be like, okay, there's like 20 companies. They all sell wrestling rings. There's 3 in Canada and 3 in the United States, or, you know, or whatever. There aren't. There's one company in the United States in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky.
Wow.
Who has a website, at least, that you can purchase rings from. So I saw that and I'm like, well, there's got to be rings around. I cold called every wrestling promotion I could find in Western Canada being like, do you have a ring? I would love to buy it. You must have spare rings. Half of them wouldn't even talk to me. Most of them were like, we would never sell our ring. Turns out wrestling rings are as good as gold.
Right.
They're just so hard to come by. Most of them are hand fabricated. It's mind blowing to me. So I just pulled the trigger. I was like, well, I guess I'm buying a wrestling ring from Lawrenceburg, Kentucky, to get it up to Vancouver. That was a whole ordeal too. Like, learned so much about international shipping duties and blah, 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 blah.
How does it come? Does they ship it to you on a truck, or is it in the mail, or what?
Yeah. Well, I think all mail comes on trucks, Chris said, but it shows up one day. I had to coordinate with this international shipping company. They basically took me by the hand, and they were very patient and very kind with me, which I endlessly appreciate. I still give them anytime they want tickets for free. Like, they're members of the family. Once we have a Boom Hall of Fame, the shipping company, God, I wish I could remember what their name was. They'd be like first entry civilian division, you know, to the Hall of Fame. But yeah, shows up on a truck and it was super stressful. Ordered it in May. Our first show was September 17th and it showed up the day before the show.
Wow.
Yeah. So very stressful couple of weeks leading up to the show with no ring. So
Brady, how did you get involved with this? And kind of discuss what the creative of Boom is, you know, because there's a lot happening here. Like you mentioned, it's a Saturday morning cartoon come to life.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how I describe it. So for me, I'll just give you a really quick recap of my wrestling career. So I trained with Lance Storm, as you know. Also spent some time training with Rocky Romero, TJ Perkins, some of those guys.
Oh, wow.
In Los Angeles. Also spent some time training with Roddy Piper. So I got sort of what I call like an Ivy League education in wrestling from these great names. Doesn't mean that I'm the greatest wrestler. Just means I got a great education in wrestling. And I went to Japan and I went to Mexico and I traveled around and I did, you know, 20, 25 extras gigs for WWE. And this was at the time when, you know, you actually do matches in the afternoon for producers, you do promos, all that sort of stuff, a little bit more of a tryout kind of situation. They had talked to me about a few different things. They had a cruiserweight show they were working on for the network and a couple different things, but nothing ever worked out for me. So I ended up kind of walking away from wrestling, feeling really frustrated, like I'd sort of done everything that I could do to try to get a job at WWE and it didn't work out. And at the time, I was doing a lot of film and television, which I still do. Mm-hmm. Doing a lot of acting. And so I felt frustrated with wrestling. I kind of walked away from wrestling. I was feeling really bitter about wrestling. And then, you know, a few years later, I was approached by a friend of mine, Ravenous Randy Myers, a really talented wrestler from Vancouver. He was the champion at Defy for quite some time. And he approached me about being involved in the creative of this new company. So he knew Max. He had helped with the original show, the Coco show for naming the baby. So he approached me about being part of the creative. That was something I was really interested in. I had traveled a lot with Lance Storm when he was booking one of the local promotions in Alberta that I was working for. So we would travel to the shows back and forth, Calgary, Edmonton, stuff. So I learned a lot about booking wrestling from Lance. Mm-hmm. And so when I sat down with Max and he sort of talked about this idea of this kind of Saturday morning cartoon, some more over-the-top characters, over-the-top sort of stories, it was something that I was really interested in. My character, Brady Malibu, is a swimsuit model, evil lifeguard, sort of over-the-top. He's always been a cartoony character. Very comedic, tongue-in-cheek, very much based on 1990s Chris Jericho, Cruiserweight, you know, Kurt Angle, 2001. These characters that I loved because they would do this like straight-faced comedy.
Right.
But then when they wrestled, the wrestling was still amazing. But then they do these promos. And so if anyone sees my promos and stuff, they're very much based on those two characters, yourself and Kurt Angle in 2001. And so being approached about this, I loved it and kind of reignited my passion for wrestling. And I think when I left wrestling, because I felt so bitter about it, I wanted to be able to come back and sort of tie that up a little bit happier. I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to spend the rest of my life being bitter about wrestling and not making it to WWE. So
right.
This was an opportunity for me to, even if I'm the only person in the world that cares about Brady Malibu's journey in wrestling, it was an opportunity for me to wrap it up in a nice way. So when we sat down, we started talking about Abraham Lincoln is one of our big characters. He's our Undertaker, our legend. We've got, you know, Tony Baroni, the evil landlord who's trying to buy the venue that we wrestle at and turn it into an NFT museum and a Thai massage parlor. We have this dancing ninja, Shaolin Funk from the Time Machine. Evil 50% owner, Kyle Fiennes, who's trying to raise the beer prices. 67-year-old Susan, who's Max's real mom, is a character in the show. It's like we're booking this serious wrestling show, sort of old school territory booking, but it just happens to be with these characters that are over the top.
Well, and that's the thing, like we always do, anybody that's ever worked with me, Inner Circle or JAS,
yep.
The rule is you play it straight.
Exactly. Right?
You can do anything you want if you play it straight. If you try and be funny, it's usually not. So if you're talking about sending Abraham Lincoln in the time machine, but you play it real, it works.
Absolutely. Can I just piggyback on that?
Real quick? Please.
That is so key to everything that we do. I think that for shorthand saying, hey, Boom Pro Wrestling is a Saturday morning cartoon, that works when you literally have like 2 seconds to talk to somebody about it. But deeper than that, it is played fully straight. And that's why the comedy is working so well, especially Lincoln.
Right.
Pete Durrett, who plays Lincoln.
Also trained by Lance Storm.
Boom. There you go. Mm-hmm. He has approached the Lincoln character like he is Daniel Day-Lewis. Like he knows every single thing about Lincoln. He does Lincoln-esque moves. He talks in a weird old-timey vernacular, but it is all played straight. And the best part about Lincoln is that he is obsessed with honesty. And so honesty is like one of the core heroic tenets of Boom Pro Wrestling because of Pete and Lincoln and what he's done. And so one of the, you know, the flip side, one of the core like evil traits is dishonesty, right? And if you're ever dishonest, then Lincoln comes to punish you.
Which also too would make for a great heel when he wants to turn. He's so honest. It's like liar, liar. You know, that mustache does not look good on you, Max, or whatever. Yes. You know, like that would be a great way to do it too.
Oh man, we have so many ideas for a Lincoln heel turn. And one of the things I love most about how we approach like the storytelling is how we're working with the wrestlers and to make sure that whatever we're doing is something that they're excited about. We're realistic about who we are and what we're doing. We're in a Legion Hall. Yeah, we're selling out 250 tickets every show. Yeah, we have a hot crowd who knows every single thing about every single character. But at the same time, like, we get it. We need these people to be engaged and on fire. So the trick is, of course, finding like, how are we going to get Lincoln, Pete, who's so protective of this character now, how are we going to get something out of him that he's excited about? And that goes for every single person on the roster for the most part.
Where are you finding your roster? Like the thing is, because these characters are so specific, are these just local indie guys? Because the question I'm asking is, if you're talking about, you know, Pete Durrett, who plays Abraham Lincoln, you know, you want to work as much as you can when you're an independent wrestler. So is Abe Lincoln exclusive just to Boom, or can he be Abe Lincoln at Defy, or like, so can we fill me in on your roster and where you're finding these guys and girls?
Pete actually wrestles in other companies under Pete Powers, is his other wrestling name. So he doesn't do the Abe Lincoln character elsewhere. It's kind of an exclusive one to Boom.
Gotcha.
So yeah, we use a lot of Vancouver area wrestlers, a lot of wrestlers from Washington, Oregon. We have some wrestlers from Alberta. So all in that Pacific Northwest area. Luckily, like, this area is just such a hotbed for talent. I feel like it almost doesn't get the love. I mean, I think Defy has helped. I think it's getting a little bit more attention now. But in the past, it maybe hasn't got as much appreciation as it should. Tons and tons of talent here. So, and of course, we're only, you know, running one show every 5 or 6 weeks. So we don't have a massive roster. So once we have these sort of key characters locked in, we don't have to bring in too many other ones. And the other thing that we do too, that I should say too, is we treat this like a season of television. So Okay. Because my background is in TV and film, of course, Max produces live comedy and pitch television shows. We sit down at the beginning of the season. So we're in season two right now. We treat everything like a season, right? So we'll sit down, map out 10 or 12 episodes. So we have these story arcs that go the whole season. So we're booking a lot further in advance than some other indie companies. And every match, every angle, every promo is leading to something. It's what sets us apart. One of the big things is that we're not just booking a series of matches in a high school gym or a Legion. We're actually building a story that is going to pay off at the end of the season.
Yeah, it's massive how much that sets us apart. So many other indie promotions are just match after match, babyface versus babyface, heel versus heel. No, outcomes don't matter very much. Will those wrestlers be back the next month? Who knows?
Yep.
Titles that go undefended for 6 months because they can't pin down the talent, that kind of stuff. And that's just the antithesis to what our approach is.
And then the characters also progress as well. So, for example, like, take a Brady Malibu, right? It's like, okay, this guy's a lifeguard. Well, that's kind of a one-note gimmick, right?
Right.
You have to add layers to that character. And I think that's something that I've been critical of. For example, if you look at like a WWE in like 2012 or something, a lot of the characters from 2012 to 2017 are pretty much the exact same. Their character didn't change very much, right? Probably with the exception of Chris Jericho, who's kind of the king of reinventing himself all the time and has done mm-hmm. that better than anyone else. But it's like, you got to add layers to these characters. They have to progress. If you watch Game of Thrones episode one and you watch in season three, the characters are not the same. They've grown. All the things that have happened to them have changed that character. So we make sure that we do that as well.
Tell us about some of the other characters. And you mentioned them in passing, but, you know, we went into depth about Abe Lincoln. Talk to me about some of your other main guys.
One of Abe Lincoln's first. So Abe Lincoln has a signature match, which is called Loser Leaves Time. And it's like The Undertaker has the casket match, Lincoln has the time machine match. So we have the time machine up on the stage, and to be a limit, to lose that match, you must be thrown into the time machine and the door is closed. So the first one he had was against his original nemesis, this guy Billy Suede, who was sort of a bully. He was beating up all the young talent. Abe stood up for the young talent. He took one of them under his wing as his protege, Parm Singh Mann. And he defeated Billy Suede in the Loser Leaves Time, sent him into the time vortex. A few months later, Parm Singh Mann, utilizing the Cerebro helmet, was able to contact a new ally through the time stream. And out comes dancing ninja Shaolin Funk, who is now a part of Abe's stable called the Time Bandits. And I will say, I don't know anything for sure, Chris, but I will say that Shaolin Funk looks an awful lot like Billy Suede.
Interesting. This is sounding like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Totally.
Like, you can have anybody, like, you know, Sir Lancelot can come out. Like, that's the thing mm-hmm. I love about this, because you could actually, you know, Loser Leaves Time. Anybody could come out. The fans would never know who's next to come out of the time-space continuum.
Exactly. Exactly. It's unfortunate that a couple of heels destroyed the time machine a couple of shows ago.
My bad.
But fingers crossed that the time machine will return at some point.
Well, you know, there's a place in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky that builds time machines.
That's right. Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. It's amazing how many times I've said those two words back, like hundreds of times. It's like I got the muscle memory right in my mouth for it.
We've also got, so on top of the Loser Leaves Time, we have a couple other specialty matches. So we have the Golden Haunches, which is sort of our Money in the Bank idol, which is a golden butt.
Nice.
I don't know where you got this, Max. Max just had this statue of a butt for some reason. So we painted that gold. I don't know where that comes from. We do an Oregon Trail elimination match, which is essentially a Survivor Series elimination match. So we have sort of some specialty matches there too.
So talk a little bit more about the season idea, which is something that we had kind of discussed before years ago for a project I was working on. How do you map this out? Because obviously you're not on TV, or if you are, it's on YouTube or whatever it may be, but how do you do your seasons?
It's a good question. I don't think I've ever had to articulate it before, but I think one of the approaches is we're trying to find it's a lot like a television show where you have to have an A plot that runs from the beginning of the episode to the end of the episode, but then you also want connective tissue between the episodes so that people come back, that they're hooked. They want to see what happens next. As we're plotting out shows, you know, we're thinking very hard about how are we ending? What are the questions people are asking after this episode? What has the payoff been? If this is somebody's first show, are we giving them all the information that they need in order to be part of the experience? Right.
Right.
And so those are the questions that we're asking ourselves, you know, from like a practical standpoint. There's an Excel sheet, you know, we all huddle around a Zoom call and we argue for hours and hours and hours on end at each other's throats sometimes about that. But yeah, it's a collaborative process and we try and try not to get too detailed with it because injuries happen. People get other opportunities, you know, talent breaks bookings, right? So what are you going to do when that happens?
Right.
We try to be more detailed than every other promotion. It's kind of our superpower, but we also try not to get too locked in if we can't.
But I mean, is it like a 10 episode arc, or is it each show is an episode for the season, or how do you do that?
Yeah, like everything leads to our season finale, which is, you know, the biggest one is just what we call it. And all roads lead there. The goal is to have everything pay off at that show. All of the, whether it's a C plot that's been simmering the whole time, or if it's a big loser leaves time match that has to happen, that's going to send everybody home happy.
Right.
Or if it's a massive swerve, you know, we're always hunting for that telenovela moment where the audience is like, left mouth agape because of what piece of information was just revealed. We had a fantastic young wrestler by the name of, he goes by the professional Travis Williams. He's a very, very, like, his persona outside of Boom is very, very indie wrestler driven. But in Boom, he's not only my half brother, but he is also Abraham Lincoln's son.
Oh my goodness.
And so that was like, these are the moments that we lead to, you know, that's a big revelation when it happens. You can hear the people in the audience like gasping. You can hear 250 people gasp. It's incredible.
And one of the cool things that we do also, and Chris, I sent you a couple of these videos, is Max does these great recap videos.
Yeah.
So if you have never been to a Boom show before, you can watch the last recap video. It's 4 or 5 minutes, really edited really nicely, shot really nicely. And it gets you up to date on all the storylines. So you don't, if you miss an episode, you can just watch the latest recap video and you're up to date. And I think that we've done a great job of attracting people that are not really wrestling fans. And that's something that we've set out to do from the beginning. Our audience is very high women. It's very high people that are not WWE, AEW, hardcore wrestling fans, which is amazing because that is very hard to do in pro wrestling, as we know. It's very hard to attract people that aren't
right.
wrestling fans. The barrier of entry is low for our shows. You just watch the last recap video. It's a great time live. We sell $4 beers, which in this economy is absolutely insane, which is also a storyline in the show because Kyle finds the evil 50% owner is trying to raise the beer
prices.
And we had a great show where we actually had the beer prices were changing after each match, depending on if the heel or babyface won. So we do some fun interactive stuff like that. But yeah, I think that's something we've done a really good job of, is attracting people that aren't wrestling fans. And some of that is through the season arc. And like Max said, making sure we have like cliffhangers at the end of each show that make you want to come back. Because if you go to a standard indie show, often you watch a series of matches and it's cool. It's maybe entertaining for people that are wrestling fans. And then you leave and it's like, do I have a reason to come back? Right? What's the reason to come back to the next show?
Why do you feel you're attracting, like you mentioned, like non-wrestling fans?
I think because our focus with social media, with the branding, with the storytelling is all about fun. This is going to be fun. Come out to the show and you're going to have a good time.
Right.
If you look at the other, especially in our neck of the woods, if you look at the other promotions that are around here, especially the very popular ones, the energy is very dark. It is very male oriented. It is very aggressive and it's very, very serious. Like they're going for that approach, which is like professional wrestling is real.
Right.
And so we're going the opposite take, which is like, this is going to be a wild time. You're going to have fun. Abraham Lincoln is there. and people show up and they know what to do. Like, you don't have to be a wrestling fan to show up and know I'm going to cheer the good guys and boo the bad guys.
Right.
It doesn't take itself too seriously.
No,
it's tongue in cheek, right?
Exactly. And I'm really proud of how many women come to the show. Our goal from day one has been 55% women. That's what we want our audience to be. And I just saw on Twitter today, Brady, one of our roster members posted a clip from a recent show that he was at in Oregon. And it was a packed house, maybe 300, 400 people there, all chanting in unison, clapping along. It was great. Every single person in that crowd was a dude.
Well, they probably didn't have anyone as handsome as Brady Malibu on the show.
maybe. But I looked at that and I was just like, I think these guys they're kind of missing the point. I often think about like the Nintendo Wii. You remember the Nintendo Wii? My parents went out to the store and bought a Nintendo Wii.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I want to play those games.
I want to play this game. Like, Boom Pro Wrestling is the Nintendo Wii of indie wrestling.
What's the Oregon Trail elimination match?
So it's a Survivor Series elimination match. We've just had one so far.
He's talking. Brady has set this up like this is some big signature match. No. This is just a Survivor Series match where at the end, every time somebody gets eliminated, the announcer said like, "Oh, they died of dysentery." It was sort of nobody come to our YouTube channel looking for a big Oregon Trail referencing.
Yeah, we did do a really cool last year. We had a New Year's show, New Year's Eve. Which, you know, we weren't sure going in how that was going to go. It was a huge hit, sold out right away. And we did a match. I was actually in the main event against Ravenous Randy Myers. And we did a match that ended at the stroke of midnight. So we had the clock projected up on the ceiling, which was amazing because me and Randy could watch the ceiling to know our exact time. And, you know, he hits me with the finish and it's 57 seconds and he covers me and the whole crowd chants down with the 3-2-1 and Happy New Year. And he won the title. And that was amazing. And like I said, we did another one where we had the beer prices changing. It was like
an Ironman match.
It was a 30-minute Ironman or 20-minute Ironman or something.
Yeah, it was an Ironman match in the main event. And the whole story of the night had been this beer prices. And so as the final sort of like tiebreaker situation, we had the beer prices fluctuate in real time with every pin in the Iron Woman match. It was a women's main event, Cat Power and Taryn from Accounting. And that was just a absolutely iconic a boom experience for the people there. Beers hit $3 at one point and I got rushed at the bar. People just right. leapt out of their seat and came running over with like money to drop it all there.
Well, they're also playing along, right?
Exactly. Yeah. That's the best part about the whole thing is like, you know, if you get people very clear characters, make sure that they know who's a bad guy, who's a good guy. Like the whole crowd is on board. It's so key. And I'm shocked that other promotions don't spend the time to do it.
Right. Tell us about the Archduchess of Wrestling.
The Archduchess. The Archduchess of Wrestling is a 9-year-old girl, 9, 10. She might be 10. She's 10 now, I think. She comes out dressed like the Pope and she has an eye patch. And she is basically, she started as sort of the ultimate authority figure. You know, anytime we need anything decided or anytime there's controversy, the royal music hits and out she comes, long procession. Oh, the whole crowd rises out of their seats in respect, takes off their hats. She gets in, she'll make a, you know, one sentence declaration and then she'll get the heck out of there. And usually it happens before intermission so that she doesn't get too tired. She's been an awesome contributor and she's representative of another one of our core tenets, which is multi-generationalism, right? We want to make an experience that isn't just for dudes who want to drink $4 beers. We want this to be a place that you can bring your kids, you can bring your parents, you can bring your grandparents, and everybody can get behind this kind of stuff. Because the storytelling, while I would say it's weirdly more complicated than every other indie show I've ever been to, it is still very, very basic storytelling. We don't talk about controversial topics. We try to keep all of that outside. This is all very, very classic Greek tragedy stuff.
And Max, you compared it once to a wedding. Right. It's like going to a wedding where your grandparents are having fun. The kids are having fun. Meanwhile, the adults are drinking beer but everyone is sort of in a safe environment where everyone is having a great time.
Yeah. It's a wedding reception. Like that's the energy that we want. Wedding reception energy.
Yeah.
The last thing about the characters on your show that I want to ask you about some of the business models that you follow. So you talked about your mother, Susan, being on the show.
Yes.
And I watched the recap where she was involved. How does one get their mother involved in a wrestling show when she's at 67 years old?
So she was involved in the Coco show at first. So with the baby naming show. So I paired up a lot of the wrestlers with friends and family. And so she came out and she got paired up with Golden Boy Travis Williams at the time. playing pure heel, who in the middle before the match, you know, told her to get out of the ring. She doesn't respect the ring. She shouldn't be there, blah, blah, blah. By the end of that match, she had hit him in the face with a bouquet of flowers. He got rolled up and lost the match. And that was like the one piece of connective tissue from that Coco show that I wanted to bring over when we started Boom. Mm-hmm. We reran it a little bit for the first show. And she was, I think the only way we got her to do this is because that initial show was in front of family and friends. She was comfortable because it's not like it was on a public stage. It's not like there would be strangers there, all that kind of stuff. All that kind of anxiety stuff kind of melted away.
Yeah.
And we told her, all you're going to do is hit this guy in the face with a bouquet of flowers. You know, that's it. And she was into it. And now every show, she's like, this is my last show. I'm not doing another show after this. And then once the show is over, she's like, okay, I've got some ideas for what happens next time. She is simultaneously like people's favorite character, but she's also by far the worst performer.
I saw. Yeah. But that's the way people's moms are always like that whenever you see, like, you know, God bless like Trent Beretta's mom or like Linda McMahon. Like, it's not quite the same, right?
Oh, yeah. She has anti-performance instincts where her intonation is wrong. She doesn't know where to stand. She doesn't know how to hold the mic. I'll have her over the day before a show. I'm like, this is what we're going to do. You're going to stand here. You're going to stand there. Then you're going to say this. And she'll be like, I got it. I got it. She goes up and she goes completely off the rails. She, in fact, at the season finale last year, we had, you don't see it in the recap videos, but she had this whole speech explaining like how she ended up having this affair with Abraham Lincoln and,
right,
yeah, and how this whole thing happened. There's one joke in there. She's like, hey, I've been thinking about this thing. I'd like to replace the joke with this other thing. And I was like, yes, mom, your joke is better. Let's do that. That's a great idea. She's like, well, I could do both jokes. I'm like, you can't do both jokes because they contradict each other. Joke one takes place in like prehistoric period and joke two takes place in 1847. They can't both take place at different times. She's like, no, I'll just do both. I'm like, mom, you cannot do both jokes. You can only do one. We debated this for 48 hours. She was up until the very last second. And then she's like, okay, fine. I'll just do the one joke. I'm like, thank you. What does she do in the middle of the show? She does both jokes. I couldn't believe it.
Right.
I have to bench my mom. If this was a wrestler who did this,
went off script.
Yeah, it would be awful, especially after two days.
I do love her enthusiasm, though, because sometimes dealing with talent can be one of the challenges, right? Because sometimes younger talent or whatever, they you pitch them an idea and it's, oh, my character wouldn't do that. Or, you know, sometimes these guys that have only been in the business a couple of years are like sometimes the most difficult to deal with. So you have to convince them that like Boom takes place in its own universe, right? Whatever you do at Boom Pro Wrestling does not affect what you are going to do at the independent show in Oregon the next week or whatever.
Right, so right. Of course.
For me as a film producer and as an actor, sometimes I'm like, what are you talking about? Because like I'll bring an actor to my set and they're saying lines and whatever. And it's like, they're not worried about what TV show they're doing the next week. It's like, so you have to kind of convince them. Obviously wrestling is different, so it's a different beast, but I love Susan's enthusiasm because sometimes convincing some of the wrestlers to do stuff can be tough.
You think that she's enthusiastic. She's so protective of her character. It's like, it drives me absolutely crazy. She's like, a grandmother would never say that. I should bring cookies. I should do this. I'm like, it doesn't matter, mom.
Okay, I guess I don't see that side.
No, yeah. It's endless with Susan. She's been benched for the past two shows, by the way, because of her behavior.
She's out of control. Susan is out of control.
She is out of control.
Brady, how is it for you? Like, you know, I assume you're probably kind of almost directing this show and you're performing at the same time. So and how many shows do you guys do like on a monthly basis or is it every month or?
So our first season was 10 shows and I believe this season is 15. So we bumped up quite a bit and we are doing our biggest show ever, March 22nd at the University of British Columbia. That one seats over 500 people, I believe, Max. That's going to be our biggest.
That's great.
Yet. Yeah. Our season runs like September to June. So yeah, first season was 10. This season is 15. So some months it's two shows, some months it's one show.
And so is it hard like when you're doing the show and directing it as well, or do you just have to worry about, because you know I know from working in the business, sometimes you're producing segments or you know I met, for example at Wembley when I had to sing Judas and then wrestle and it's like I got all these different things going on.
Yeah,
it's hard to kind of keep it all together.
I think that's what I'm loving the most about Boom. So again, coming from a film production background, a lot of the films and shows that I've produced, I've also acted in. It's like I'm running around with my head cut off. I'm
right.
Ordering catering and, you know, instructing crew and dealing with scripts and whatever. And so this has been a blast with that stuff. Like, so we sit down, there's a creative team, Max, myself, Wild Eyes, Travis Woloshin, who's also our host. He's kind of our mean Gene Okerlund. He's amazing. And Kyle Fiennes, who's an incredible comedian and also is a performer on the show as well as a heel manager, evil owner. So we sit down and we map the shows out. At the show, I am often sort of producing segments, usually typically sometimes my segments involve many people. There's promos, there's matches. So I am producing and then, of course, also performing.
Right.
But honestly, man, I kind of just love it. Like, I love the running around with my head cut off all day. Like, to me, it's better than sitting around, you know, in film, you're often, if you're on a set, you're just hurry up and wait, right? You're sitting in your trailer waiting to do something. And it's like, this is the opposite. I'm just like, I can't breathe by the end of the day because I'm running around so much. I just love it. I mean, my dream really is to produce wrestling. It's to produce segments. It's to, you know, be a part of the creative and side of that, and always been into that. And booking has been something I've always wanted to do. So this is kind of a dream to get to do that.
So when you're talking about the shows, you know, and you mentioned that you're building up a fan base, you're working bigger rooms, you're promoting almost like as an adult night out rather than pro wrestling. What's your kind of business model as far as sponsors and that sort of thing, and be able to pay for it? Because like you mentioned, if you're doing 250 tickets and they're, I don't know what they cost, $25 or whatever, $50, that's only a certain amount of revenue to pay everything and rent everything. I'm assuming you're probably trying to do outside things as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the tricky thing. To deliver the show at the quality that we want, it costs a lot.
Right.
And simultaneously, we have a huge team, not just in creative and things like that, but, you know, our camera crew, our production crew, Lane Small, who does the lighting, fantastic. Like, he's on another level. He's like, him doing an indie show like us is absurd. Like, he should be doing AEW, something like that.
Right.
Dan Lohner, camera guy. Like, this is, he's like a Cannes Film Festival nominated cinematographer. Like, he comes out and he shoots wrestling in like sweltering heat, carrying a camera for 2.5 hours. They do all this for like indie wrestling money. It does not make sense. I don't know why they do it. I don't know why I do it, but because of the team is so large. And then of course the performers and all this sort of stuff. And because of the quality that we're trying to achieve, yeah, where does the money go? Of course, I'll tell you right now, I'm very proud of the fact that we earn a profit every single time. But
that's great.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. That's been huge for us. We're also so protective of the brand. When you take on a sponsor, how are you going to keep the qualities of vibrance, humor? And I would say another core tenet of ours is generosity, right? That comes out in the $4 beers. How do you keep that with a sponsor, and how does that get folded into it? Right now we have one sponsor. They sponsor every single show. That's the way I like it. They're simple, they're easy to work with. They get a huge ovation. We let everybody know at the beginning of the show that the $4 beers is because of them, and they're like, the thunderous applause that comes from that is massive for them. But yeah, sponsors, of course. We're trying to get the social media going as well. I think ultimately the goal, though, you know, for this to become a life-changing thing for us, is to get some kind of television situation rolling out. You know, I look at the Canadian television landscape. People, your listeners probably don't know this, but in Canada, there's like a law that says if you're a broadcaster in Canada, a portion of your content must be Canadian.
Sure. CTRC.
Yeah, CanCon. I look at this and I know what it costs to produce. And I know the quality. I know how wrestling is like in this boom period. I'm like, it's absurd to me that... We've had some calls. That's why I say it's absurd. I'm not delusional, but that so many people, that people have turned us down, because I look at what we're doing and I'm like, the person who decides to take a risk on us is going to make so much money. It's silly. You have to fill your airwaves with Canadian content. So, I mean, here we are. That to me is like the ultimate goal.
Yeah, I think TV is a huge one for us. Obviously, I have a film company that we pitch television shows. So that's kind of integrated into this. And then also, I think keeping your expenses under control is a big thing as well. You know, you see a lot of people start independent wrestling companies and they're just big wrestling fans and they're flying in all these wrestlers from all over the country, you know, different indie guys and stuff. And suddenly their talent budget explodes like crazy, right? So we understand how much talent is in the Pacific Northwest. We don't really need to fly in, especially our shows are already selling out. So we don't have to fly in the sort of popular indie names that are out there, because we're doing something different. We're not trying to get the internet wrestling buzz necessarily. Like, we're attracting a very different audience. So we don't have to bring in your Mike Baileys and stuff like that as much as I would love to, because he's incredible. But, you know, various guys on the independents that we may not bring in. So we're able to keep our talent costs a little bit more under control as well.
So, and let me ask, I was going to say, like, when you mentioned, for example, Mike Bailey, would you bring him in and fit him into these storylines?
It's hard.
That's what I mean, right? How do you do that?
Yeah, exactly. On the one hand, I would actually love to bring in guys like that because of their social media reach. if we brought in somebody like that, it would be purely because I want them to be posting about Boom Pro Wrestling on their social media. I'll try to tell the story as sensitively as I can, but we did have a big name come through. It was a big surprise. When he walked through the entrance, the place was silent because they didn't know who he was.
Because you mentioned you have different types of wrestling fans, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Who was he? It's not an insult. It's just a different type of audience. I'm just curious as to how big of a name it was.
Sure. It was El Fantasmo from New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Well, and the thing with El Fantasmo, though, and if he was here, I'd say the same thing. He's got a big name amongst hardcore wrestling fans. And if you're in Japan, but I mean, most people, even if he walked out on AEW tomorrow, might not know who he is. And like, once that's just because he doesn't have the exposure. Exactly. So it doesn't surprise me when you bring someone like that in. Like he did Defy last night and it was crazy. And then he came here today and no one knew because this is not the same audience. And that in some ways is almost a testament to what you're building here.
Yeah, true.
Exactly. And so it's really tough. Like I love independent wrestling and all these stars and like, but do you bring in someone like a Mike Bailey or a Masha Slamovich and have them walk out to silence? Like that just doesn't, I don't know. Something about that doesn't feel right. I would love their social media reach. That's for sure.
Well, and there's all other companies in Vancouver that are already doing that. Right. So we don't, you know, we're hitting a different audience. So I think as much as possible, we want to grow the brand with our sort of homegrown, you know, our own in-house roster before we start really expanding to bringing names in, that we may not need right now since we're already, I mean, our last show, our Rumble sold out in like 4 hours. Mm-hmm. So we are selling like hotcakes, even if it's only 250 tickets, it's still sold right out.
Sell out to sell out. That's what Paul McCartney said. When you sell out, you never know how many tickets you could have sold. When you don't sell out, you know exactly how many tickets you can sell. So, and that's the thing. Once again, I'm really, cause I used to live in downtown Vancouver. So I know, you know, it's like living downtown, I don't know, New York or LA or something. There's a hot vibe to it and it's a cool type of thing. So I can see this, you know, let's go to the Gaspump District or whatever the hell it was called?
Gastown.
Yeah. I mean, let's go to Gastown and check out Boom and then we'll go grab some drinks after or whatever, you know?
Well, it's funny because I'm at my gym downtown Vancouver and we get a lot of celebrities, a lot of actors, everyone that's in town filming movies is always at my gym and stuff. And so, you know, I had the cast of Riverdale out at the shows. I've had the cast of Arrow out and you know, they're all just like blown away by this live show. They can't believe it. And they're telling all their friends. And again, it's like you wouldn't have that. I have people coming up to me at the gym that I know for a fact would never watch wrestling on television. It's just not their thing.
Yeah.
They're coming up to me like, oh my God, is Parm Singh Man ever going to win a match? When's Tony Baroni going to cash in the golden haunch? Like they're invested in these storylines. And I think, again, part of that is just the barrier of entry. Because if you're not a wrestling fan and I tell you you should watch wrestling, it's like, let's say you just want to watch WWE. Oh man, you got to watch 3 hours on Monday, 2 hours on Friday. Pay-per-view weeks, another four. It's like a big investment of time to get into wrestling. So our shows, you know, being maybe once a month, it's a fun night out for them, easy to follow, and it's not a high barrier of entry for them.
As we start to wind down here, I'm wondering, like, it's so interesting to me, this concept of these characters that you've created. Like, if you did bring in, once again, Mike Bailey and said, tonight you're going to be, you know, the steamroller or, you know, you're going to be freaking, I don't know, Edgar Allan Poe from The Time Machine. Yeah. I wonder how your fans would react to something like that and how the guys and girls would react to it. Because to me, it would sound like it would be a pretty fun thing to try and attempt.
I've thought about this endlessly, man, so many times. You're kind of hinting at something that I think is where I'd like to try and take Lincoln in season 3, which is like, if we're going to have an attraction match, it's somebody's walking through that time machine and who's it going to be? And we don't know who.
Yeah.
it's Lincoln's, you know, gauntlet basically and one at a time. I think that it's possible. It's definitely possible. And I love the idea. Great minds think alike, Chris. it's tricky just due to the cost of, as you know, living in Vancouver, accommodations and flights out here are brutally expensive.
Yeah.
And so it's not just the talent's PO, but it's all the other stuff that goes along with bringing them out. And it's an unfortunate hindrance that we have living where we do. If we were doing this out of Las Vegas, sky's the limit with what we could do with travel would be amazing. Unfortunately, Vancouver is the second to third most expensive city in the world for a reason, and it hurts.
Well, I think there's certain names that would be perfect for Boom, like your Danhausens or your Orange Cassidys. Like, to me, sure. Like those characters, I'm like, man, our audience would eat that up, right? So there are characters out there that I think would really fit in with the brand really nicely.
What's your next step with Boom? Obviously, you've grown fairly quickly, and you mentioned you're selling out so many shows, and that's, you know, looks great. I'm looking at your website. You got a lot of shows coming up, which is good, and some of them are sold out already. What are your plans for us? Then I also want to ask you something else about the way you sell your tickets.
Plans for now are just to keep on keeping on. You know, one of the challenges for any small business is, how do you expand? How do you grow?
Yeah.
For the average person who would be listening to this or would, you know, be on, you know, I meet at a cocktail party, I'm telling them all this, they'll say, well, get a bigger venue.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, like with Vancouver being what it is, there are no mid-tier venues that we can completely control. So a small tier venue like we have, I can control every single detail. Everybody who works in that venue, every person that a fan interacts with is going to be somebody who's motivated to make sure that show goes well. As soon as you move into a mid-tier venue, drink prices are $10. We don't control that anymore. Ticket prices go way up because of Ticketmaster, like Monopoly garbage. It's staffed by people that do not care one iota if your show goes well or not.
Yeah, of course.
Vancouver just does not have a middle tier venue for us to grow into. There's like a 4,000 person theater we could rent, but we can't go from 250 to 4,000. So we're in a really difficult situation. There's no natural way to progress right now. So we are hoping that we can, right now I'm just trying to focus on finding unique venues that we can do larger shows. That's this one coming on at the university. And then expanding the social media reach and just awareness that we exist and that we're here. Because I remember when I was a diehard wrestling fan, I spent so much time and energy trying to convince people that wrestling was awesome. And what Boom Pro Wrestling is, this is the thing that the diehard wrestling fan can show his girlfriend and get her to understand,
yeah,
right, what it is.
Right.
I'm sure that the diehard wrestling fans who are listening to this, they know exactly what I'm talking about. Come on to see a wrestling show. You're going to love it. They sit there. Your friend who was taking you up on this offer sits there, smirk on their face, is a little weirded out by the energy sometimes. Somebody across the room is saying, is he screaming something super inappropriate? It can be a very aggressive and unforgiving environment. Boom Pro Wrestling is the thing to show your girlfriend, basically.
Talk about a little bit about this. I like that concept of selling season tickets. Mm-hmm. So when you sell a season ticket, like, you say, here's all the shows, or do you have a guaranteed amount of shows to do that? Do the people get the same seat every time?
Yeah. So any indie promoter who's listening to this, I strongly encourage that you go with season tickets if you can. What we do is we have season ticket holders. They're basically buying a ticket to every Saturday show. And that's where we're telling our big sweeping epic from beginning to end. Our Friday shows, those are more experimental, where we're telling a story from beginning to end. It's still a great time, but we maybe don't know what's going to happen right now. And so the season ticket is there for the people who really want to follow along and not miss anything. They get in early as well because we don't have reserve seating. We have, we have general seating. So we have which has been awesome, because we have a lineup around the block leading up to every show, an hour before the show. So season ticket holders, they get in early, they can find their preferred seat, and then away we go. But it's been a huge boon for us, and would highly recommend people attempt it if you're in that position.
Last question for you. What was your favorite moment in Boom Pro Wrestling history? And you can start, Max.
There is, my mom obviously is a big part of my life now, even bigger than I thought. So in our season finale last year, Abraham Lincoln lost Loser Leaves Time at the hands of Brady Malibu, no less. Mm-hmm. And so he was cast into the time machine. The audience was in shock. A few matches later, we make this big revelation delivered by my mother that Travis Williams is Abraham Lincoln's son. But of course, he's just been cast into the time machine. He's no longer here. And Trav Williams, he grabs the mic and he looks at the time machine. He says, I'm going in after him. The crowd gasps. My mom grabs the mic. I'm going with you. Yeah. They both enter the time machine. As they're doing it, the whole crowd in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada is singing a somber version of the Star Spangled Banner.
I saw.
It was
unprompted, right?
Yep. Unprompted. Completely a natural thing that just came out of the audience. Like, I have shivers just thinking about it. I used to cry thinking about it. That's how moved I was in the moment. There was a a little boy who was there for the first time. I say little boy. He was like 14 years old. When Lincoln lost, he turned to his mom. I was standing right behind him. He turned to his mom with he had tears in his eyes. It was that mind blowing. So that whole thing was just too much. You know, it was great.
How about you, Brady?
So my first one is one I already mentioned, where Ravenous Randy beat me at the stroke of midnight. That was just such an amazing moment. The crowd just went absolutely nuts for that. The second one is we did this whole storyline. So my stable, the Entourage, myself, television actor Sachin Sahel, who's been in a million shows. He's sort of our evil Bobby Heenan kind of manager. And then Malik Mello, who's an awesome up-and-coming guy here in Vancouver. If you haven't seen him, check him out. The Entourage, we've been feuding with the Time Bandits, which is Abraham Lincoln, Shaolin Funk, and their protege, Parm Singh Man. And we did this whole long storyline. Shaolin is always dancing with the crowd. The crowd loves. He comes out to Jungle Boogie and dances with the crowd. It's amazing. And so we did this whole storyline where I hate dancing, and I wanted to enact. I was drafting up a bylaw for Boom Pro Wrestling called the Footloose Law, where all dancing was banned in Boom Pro Wrestling.
That's great.
And so we had this six-man tag match where if we won, and this is the match where we brought El Fantasmo in as my long-lost brother. He was dressed like me. He was my long-lost brother. We brought him in. If we won, dancing would be banned. No audience members, no wrestlers. No one would ever be allowed to dance again. So, of course, the Time Bandits defeat us in the end. Travis Wild Eyes comes in and he's got the hard hat and the vest on. A couple other wrestlers come out. We hit the YMCA. The entire crowd and the wrestlers do the YMCA to end the show. And Max, everyone was like, I don't think it's going to work. I don't know if it's going to work. I was like adamant that we do it. And it's such a beautiful, fun, stupid moment. And the crowd played along, and everyone just went home with the biggest smile on their face and telling people to go to the next Boom Pro Wrestling show.
I was convinced. I was like, the song is too lame. It's too uncool. Nobody's going to want to look stupid. You're asking every audience member to look silly. They're not going to do it.
They all did it.
And then what convinced me before the show is that you made me listen to it. And just the opening riff of that song.
Makes you happy.
Yeah. I get chills now just hearing it.
It's funny, too, because like coming from training with Lance Storm, renowned comedy expert Lance Storm, but he actually did teach me so much about how to make comedy work in wrestling, because he knew that I wanted to do that. And it was part of my character. You know, he always taught me to make sure that the comedy, like I was allowed to look like an idiot, but you never make pro wrestling look stupid. And I think that that's something that we do really beautifully is like,
yeah.
And some of this is subjective. Some people like this stuff, but I'm not, you won't see me wrestling the Invisible Man or like just some of that stuff that goes viral online where it's like, to me, people see clips of that and they go, oh, look how stupid wrestling is. Right.
Right.
Us, like you said, like, yeah, Brady Malibu, swimsuit model, and former, 16th president of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, are embroiled in a year-long blood feud, and there's a time machine and dancing ninjas, but it's played so serious that people in the audience have tears in their eyes when this thing is over. It's so beautiful. Like, we were able to do that without making a mockery of pro wrestling, even though the characters are over the top.
Yeah.
Well, guys, it's been great talking to you. Congratulations. You built up something very cool here. And if I'm ever in Vancouver, I will come down and check out Boom. It sounds like a blast.
You can come out of the time machine.
That'd be great. Yeah, I'll come out of the time machine. Ivanhoe or something like that.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Chris. I appreciate it. And I saw you at AEW this summer, and I thank you very much because when we did the Escaping Denver episode, that really helped launch the show in the U.S. It's been a huge help. So I can't thank you enough for that. And I've told you this before as well, but you've been such an inspiration on my career. I read A Lion's Tale when I was on my way to Japan for my first tour of Japan. I was reading the chapter where you went to Germany and you said you didn't know if anyone was going to pick you up at the airport. And I realized mid-flight to Tokyo that I also did not know if anyone was picking me up at the airport. And there was a dude there with a sign with my name on it, luckily. But so you've just been a huge inspiration. Like I said, a lot of my character is based on your cruiserweight run. So I very much appreciate you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And congratulations once again. Go Abraham Lincoln. Honest Abe. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Chris.